Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi-mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Loudermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer for HowStuffWorks.com.
Today we're talking about fighting asteroids, some of our best strategies for fighting these bad boys in the sky.
Yeah, these near-Earth asteroids, or NEAs.
So what do you think the chances are we'll make it through this podcast without getting struck by an NEA? What are your best estimates, Robert?
My best estimates? Well, if I wanted to tempt fate, I would just say there's a 0% chance that an asteroid would take us out before we're done here.
But there's always a chance.
0.01%, maybe.
Oh, that's pretty high.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, what do the experts say?
Well, the experts diverge wildly
on destruction.
This topic, actually. I mean, we get people who are saying 1 in 10. Well, the odds of us being hit by a near-Earth asteroid.
The planet, not the podcast, right?
Yeah, the planet. 1 in 10 in the next century. And then you have people who are saying, you know, maybe more like 1 in 300,000. But one thing they do agree on is it's a question of when and not if, certainly. I mean, and if we need any proof of that, you just look around the Earth or just look at the moon. We've seen how things have these asteroids wiped out Earth, or at least notably redecorated it in the past.
Right, yeah, the signs are there, and human time is just nothing compared to the cosmic time we're dealing with.
Right, space is infinitely patient. They'll get us sooner or later.
But yeah, what are we going to do? That's the big question, right?
Yeah, well, NASA definitely has an interest in this, and it's floated some ideas before, but there are plenty of observatories all around the world that are searching the skies and keeping track of these NEAs, if you will. And what an NEA is specifically is an asteroid that's greater than a kilometer in size. So those are the ones that scientists think could really have the most damage, worldwide damage, mm-hmm. and could result in your favorite topic.
Civilization destruction, or what? The end of the world?
Nuclear impact winter.
Oh, yes, impact winter, yeah, which is like nuclear winter, except it would be caused by an asteroid hitting the Earth. And that's also what some people think happened
to the
dinosaurs with
right.
The KT boundary?
Yeah,
KT boundary extinction event.
And then you have smaller scale stuff too, like Tunguska or the big old crater down in Yucatan. So there's plenty of evidence of these guys hitting Earth before. So we've come up with some plans to foil these asteroids.
Right.
And we should emphasize that they're all in the very, very, very beginning stages.
Right. There's, you know, some of them, you know, NASA scientists or whoever have actually, you know, worked out schematics and plans for other things. We're dealing very much with the theoretical,
almost science fiction.
Yeah. A lot of stuff is going to sound pretty sci-fi.
That's what you get when you mm-hmm. get a bunch of scientists in the same room and stuff like the Planetary Defense Council. You know, they're just going to come up with some crazy ideas. And we're going to talk about some of those ideas today.
Right. Now, inevitably, earlier we talked about, stopping a hurricane. And, of course, one of the instant things that came to mind was, can we blow it up with a nuclear weapon? So, of course, people have thought about asteroids the same way. Can't we just launch a nuclear missile at it and blow it up? And then we don't have to worry about it anymore, right?
Right.
Wrong.
No.
Because the whole thing is that if you... It's not necessarily like that video game Asteroids, right? Is that what it was called, Asteroids?
Yeah, back in the 1980s with Atari. I was very good at it.
Yeah, where you blow them up, don't have to worry about them anymore. In reality, though, it would turn an incoming asteroid into, like, asteroid shrapnel, into just, like, cosmic buckshot coming towards the planet. Like, you might be able to turn and say that one of those 1-kilometer-wide civilization busters into a whole bunch of smaller ones, but each of those smaller ones could then still cause catastrophic damage to wherever they hit. So the idea is to not destroy the asteroid, but deflect it. Change its course a little, because we're a very small, tiny speck in the universe and in the galaxy. So why not? You know, there's plenty of room out there. Let's just push these guys aside and let them carry on their business elsewhere.
So you detonate the nuke in the vicinity of the asteroid.
Right. You would perform a standoff.
Nuclear blast, I think, right?
You perform a standoff nuclear blast. And the idea here is, you detonate the nuclear weapon a good distance from the asteroid, from the incoming asteroid. And not the blast, but the radiation that moves out from the blast would push the asteroid off course.
Okay, I see that. So it's kind of like throwing like a bowling ball in a kid's pool to move a little toy boat or something.
Right, yeah. If you can imagine like a kid's pool with a boat in it, throw a bowling ball in and the waves from the bowling ball would move the little boat. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So we got nukes. And then tagging on to this is this thing called the kinetic, what is it called? The kinetic?
NASA has laid out designs for a nuclear interceptor, which would in theory deliver these nuclear warheads to deliver a standoff nuclear blast. But they also have a kinetic interceptor in the early planning stages. And basically the whole idea here is people were saying, hey, I don't know, we're trying to disarm the planet so we don't destroy ourselves with nuclear weapons. Maybe, we don't need to keep them around just to try and blow up asteroids or knock them off course. So there are people that say we can just use kinetic energy to send the asteroid off of its path of destruction. And that just means what it sounds like, taking the spaceship without a nuclear weapon in it, a rocket, etc., and just running it straight into the asteroid. Not enough to shatter it into a million pieces or anything, but enough to just tap it.
Yeah, give it a little nudge off course.
Yeah.
A little galactic nudge is what we're after here. And crazy thing here is you really don't need much of an impact if you get it far enough ahead of time. Over at space.com, they were saying that a mile per hour impact would be enough to divert the asteroid by like 170,000 miles if you got to it in time. So I think that would be like a 20 years ahead of the predicted collision.
So we're talking like electric car speed. Bam, right into it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, outside of the nukes, there's this whole body of tactics that involve solar radiation.
Yes, we have several designs that involve solar-powered orbital mechanics. And to really understand this, first, again, think about the nuke blowing up and the radiation pushing the asteroid off course. Now, think about a really sunny day. What are you going to wear outside? Are you going to wear a black robe? Or are you going to wear like a white pantsuit?
I'm never going to wear a white pantsuit. But yes, in this scenario, yes, I would wear the white pantsuit.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Because it deflects more solar radiation than it absorbs, whereas the black robe would just absorb all the solar radiation. So one particular plan calls for essentially dressing the asteroid in a white pantsuit, or more accurately, painting it or dusting it a lighter color, because then it will deflect more solar radiation.
And the solar radiation will then give it enough of a push to move it off course.
Right. It'll end up pushing off the solar radiation that is deflected off of the asteroid will push it off of its current course.
And that's good for us.
Right. Yeah. And like.
So we like the white pantsuit.
Yeah, this is a good option.
The problem, though, is in actually applying this light-colored dusting to the asteroid, because they're not really clear on that. I mean, Robert and I talked maybe about like a crop duster type of approach, mm-hmm. but the mechanics of painting something white, you know, while it's moving and, you know, landing there in the first place are certainly
unclear.
Yeah,
I like the idea of landing a crew of
house painters.
Yeah, or little robots that'll gradually paint the whole thing.
Yeah, put some advertising slogos. Can you imagine how much those would go for?
Oh, yeah, Sea Rock City and big print on the side of the asteroid.
And then in the same solar radiation body of ideas, we have the solar sail.
Right, and this is a very similar idea. Instead of painting it or, you know, or dusting it, you just hoist a sail up, a big solar panel just mounted to the top of the asteroid. Which, you know, we've landed things on asteroids before, so it can be done.
Indeed, we have. Eros.
Mm-hmm. However, we haven't really set up shop on any of these asteroids. We haven't, like, erected any kind of a structure that... So some people say we would want to control it. We basically steer the asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people were like, the thing's going to be spinning, you know. They're saying it's not very... they're saying it would be very difficult to navigate an asteroid with a sail on top.
Ahoy, matey. And then there's another solar radiation tactic that we've got in the books.
Yes, there is. And this one is pretty cool because it sounds very much like something Wile E. Coyote would pull out, and that is the big solar net.
Ah, yes, right, the solar net. And this isn't really what you picture. I mean, because we talked about this at first, and I just picture, you know, the population of the world kind of holding this net up to block the Earth from this catastrophic asteroid that's on its way in. And then, bang, you know, the net holds up at the last minute, and it's rocketed back into space. But that is not actually...
Not quite what we're going for.
The approach that the scientists have for this one. It's more about draping the asteroid in question in this giant... net that would be made of a solar reflective substance, and again, trying to generate that solar radiation effect. But the problem here, of course, is draping an asteroid with a net is not the easiest task to carry out.
Yeah, I mean, how are you going to get up there? Are you just going to hold it and, you know, let it fly through it? Are you going to put leaves over it and throw out some asteroid bait? I mean,
fishermen have a hard enough time untangling their nets in the ocean. I can't imagine us doing it in outer space.
Okay, and then there's actually one more solar-related deflection technique, but it's a little different. Go back again to the black robes versus white pantsuit. This idea is more black robe-related, and this has to do with simply using... They used to say one big mirror, but now most plans are talking about several different mirrors to redirect solar radiation, solar energy, and concentrate it in at an oncoming asteroid. Okay. And then the idea is the asteroid absorbs the solar radiation and it heats up the surface.
Right, the resulting heat.
Right, and also it's important, we wouldn't be talking about the entire asteroid. We'd be talking like concentrating it on one area. So this is very, you know, it's kind of like the ant in the magnifying glass kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
So they concentrate the solar energy on the asteroid, on this one portion of its surface, and then it heats up and begins to emit vapors.
Yeah, kind of like a debris plume almost.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think they refer to it, they even use the verb eject to say it ejects you know, debris from the surface. And that acts like a thruster. That's stuff rising up from the surface, pushing the asteroid off of its original course.
Okay.
And again, we have to stress, like we said earlier, we're not talking massive changes right off the bat. We're talking about hitting these things early enough to where very small changes will ultimately make very large changes.
Sure. I think they also call this method laser sublimation because you're trying to sublimate the surface of the atmosphere with that concentrated sun. And then, of course, there are rockets. Rockets are always in the picture when you discuss any space plan.
Yeah.
And this is basically what you think it would be, which is just strapping a rocket to the asteroid and then... you know, having that propel the asteroid off course.
Push it out of the way, yeah.
So the problem with this one, and there are problems with all of these, as you guys have already figured out, is that fuel could be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, because you've got to get all the way out there to the asteroid that could be, what, like 20 years away. And then once you get the rocket mounted on the surface, you've got to fuel that rocket. So that's going to take fuel as well, right?
Right, right. So I don't know if that asteroid would look lovely wearing a rocket. So let's move on to our next approach, which is the grav tractor.
Yeah, and this one sounds very sci-fi because it's like tractor beam or something. And it is pretty science fiction when you get down to it. And this one involves the principle that that in anything out there has a is going to have a gravitational pull.
Sure. Yeah.
Whether you're talking about an asteroid or man-made spacecraft, everything exerts a gravitational pull.
Sure.
So if we were to get a big spaceship to go out there to this asteroid and sort of hang out around it,
orbit perhaps.
Yeah. And and then it just sort of begins to move, and the asteroid moves with it.
Right.
Because it is caught up in the ship's gravitational pull.
Right. So the tractor's acting as kind of a cosmic tugboat or something.
Yeah, cosmic tugboat.
Yeah, pulling the asteroid off its fatal collision course. But again, I mean, how are we going to get this giant cosmic tugboat up into the space? I mean, we don't have such a good track record with getting spacecraft up there now. So if you can imagine this giant tugboat being launched, it's kind of an insane thought.
Yeah,
so,
to get it out there, and then how big would it have to be? And then I've also read where people are concerned that it would have to use thrusters to keep from crashing into the asteroid that it's trying to pull away, and that could counteract the gravitational pull.
Right. Okay. All right. And then, of course, we get to the robots. I love the robots.
Yeah. This one, if the last one was science fictiony, this one's even more science fictiony, and it's just sending hungry robots to the asteroid, which is actually this. It's an actual program. This is not just a harebrained idea. NASA has funded the Modular Asteroid Deflection Mission Ejector Node, or MADMIN, project. It's really not that different from the rocket idea that we discussed earlier. Like we said, the rocket, the deal with the rockets is you get a rocket there, strap it to the planet, how are you going to fuel it, right? Well, in this case, the asteroid is the fuel. The robots would chew up the surface, and then they would eject the material from the surface with a mass driver. For any of you sci-fi fans or video game aficionados out there, this is a lot like a railgun.
Okay.
And we have an article on the site about railguns if you want to learn more about that. So, yeah, it's just using electromagnetism and these coils to eject material at a really high speed. So no fuel needed. The robots would be nuclear-powered, and they would create their thrust by just chewing up the asteroid and just spitting it.
I think that's my favorite. Although I'm not sure. It could be the net.
The net's pretty good, but the chewing robots would make a good movie.
Yeah, it definitely would. Better than Armageddon, I'm almost definitely sure. So that's really all of the concrete ideas that scientists have. And then, of course, there's always, when all else fails, panic. So you'd want to build a bunker, and you'd want to brush up on your road warrior rules.
Yeah, stockpile a bunch of food and weapons.
Definitely, definitely.
Start a Doomsday cult.
Oh, and here's my favorite part. You definitely want to leave a note for the next dominant species on Earth that evolves after said nuclear winter impact.
Yeah, that's the polite thing to do, I think.
Yeah, and you want that to be the giant squid, is that correct?
I think it's the giant squid.
I think it might be the cockroach, although I certainly hope it's not.
Maybe they can power sharing there.
Yeah. If you want to check out any of these articles on asteroids or asteroid mining or what's going on in space, visit howstuffworks.com or visit our science blog, Science Stuff, at blogs.howstuffworks.com. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and keep on fighting the good fight against the asteroids.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids?
Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.